Welcome to Straight Up Dog Talk, a new kind of podcast where no topic is off limits. We're bringing in experts and owners to have the conversations we should be having as a dog community. Each week, a new guest will share firsthand experiences, educational resources, or professional guidance to help you learn and grow along with your dog. You won't get one perspective here, you'll get them all, because every dog is different and every owner is too.
You can follow along on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at Straight Up Dog Talk, or by visiting www.straightupdogtalk.com. Tune in from any of your favorite podcast platforms.
Welcome to Straight Up Dog Talk. We're back again with another episode. I'm Em, and as usual, we're here with Josh.
Hello.
And tonight's guest is Alexis, and we're going to talk about her dog, Buster, who has cancer, and the journey that she has gone on with him. How are you doing tonight, Alexis?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good.
Good. We're really good. We're excited to have you here tonight and learn all about this. This is, I know it's not been an easy process for you, but it is one of those topics that I think will really help other people out there, just because I think, you know, if your dog gets cancer and you don't know where to go or what to do or how to change their diet, it can be really overwhelming. And I think that by you sharing your story, this could potentially help so many people going through something similar. So why don't you start off and tell us a little bit about yourself? And I know you have the other two dogs, so just give us a little rundown on your household and then we can go into the tougher stuff.
Oh, yes. So I have three dogs, Buster, who's 9, Ella, who's also 9, and then Hudson, who's 1.5 years. In December of 2021, Buster was diagnosed with mast cell cancer. And like you said, it wasn't a fun experience. I did so much research on what to do, what not to do. And pretty much we just kind of like went on this motion of doing day to day and didn't know exactly what the subject of hand to be able to fix him was, and there was no answers to that. So then I learned a lot since then, and he is now on a holistic palliative care after doing 9 months of chemo. He ended up having to where he was like getting sick all the time, and so that's why we decided to take him off chemo and just do palliative care, and that's pretty much where we're at now.
And you also have Ella and Hudson. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about them as well?
Yeah, so Ella is 9-year-old German Shepherd, a Husky Hound mix. She is completely obsessed with Squishmallows. It's a weird thing for her. I don't know why, but she is completely obsessed. And then we have a 1.5-year-old Hudson. He's a Black Lab Staffy mix. And he has definitely given me a run for my money because I was not used to what puppy life was since they're almost 10 years old. So he's definitely showing us how to be patient.
Puppies definitely do that. I think that, you know, you get an older dog. Toby was, gosh, I think 9 when I got Fitz. And so now he's quite a bit old. He's 12, 13 years old, and Fitz will be 6. So it's a big difference when you have a dog that's slower and hanging out and chilling on the couch, and then you have this puppy that's just like, which on top of having a dog that is also being treated for cancer, I can't even imagine. I'm sure that was a lot.
It was a lot. So Buster got diagnosed in December of 2021. September of 2022 is when we got Hudson. So it was a decent gap in between that, but we still had it like he was still doing chemo and I got a puppy. So it was, and that was right when his chemo hit that made him sick all the time. So sick puppy. So that I guess kind of helped me also make the decision to take him off chemo so he could live his best life with Hudson.
Yeah, that's completely understandable. You said that you started your Instagram to record Buster's journey. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we started our Instagram to show, honestly, it was my grandpa. He texted me every day. It was like, hey, how's Buster? Hey, how's Buster today? So I was like, okay, Papacy, let me start an Instagram. You go follow it. And then I'll post pictures so you can actually see how Buster's doing day to day. And then one thing led to another. And then here we are with almost 5,000 followers. And it's just crazy how me showing my grandpa how my dog was doing has led to a whole community of people.
It's crazy how Instagram works like that. And it's so funny because I feel like, you know, we've barely even scraped with the possibilities of how big this community is, because there are millions of followers out there, but 5,000 is a lot. I mean, it was a lot when I hit 5,000. And now here we are trying to build up the podcast account. And I'm excited because we have 260 followers. That's, you know, it's like the smallest little milestones, but it's really neat to see the community come together, especially over something like a dog being sick. It's nice to have that extra support. And I'm sure that there are plenty of people who have given you advice and asked you questions. How do you feel that kind of stuff when it comes in?
That's the reason I keep doing it, because Instagram's not easy. But the reason I keep doing our Instagram is because of the people that not only have helped me, but that I have helped. And I always said, if I help one dog get through their cancer journey, it's worth all the troubles that I've put through and all the trials and tribulations that Buster has gone through to help save the next dog, basically.
I think that's an excellent way to look at it. Let's talk a little bit about the cancer itself. You said that he was diagnosed in December of 2021. Why don't you walk us through how you found out and how they diagnosed it and all of the steps that you went through up to the chemo?
So probably starting in, I would say, August of 2021, his right front forearm kept swelling, and I couldn't figure out why. So I put an ice pack on it, it'd go down, put a heating pack on it, go down. So I was like, okay, maybe he'll hurt himself. So ended up in, I think, November-ish is when I was like, something's not right. So I took him in. They did a bunch of FNAs, fine needle aspirates, to look and see what exactly it was, because they couldn't see anything on x-rays. So it had too much blood mixed in with the FNA, so they couldn't actually see. So they said, okay, we're going to send you to a specialist so they can go in and debulk it. Beforehand, he also had two tumors behind his ear that we didn't know what they were. So they went and took those off. They ended up being mast cell, but grade 0, so benign, I guess, in the cancer community. And they said, okay, you're good. He's fine. He doesn't need chemo, but do see the specialist for his leg. So I go to the specialist, and they decided that they wanted to do a biopsy and debulk his tumor. And it ended up coming back that he had a grade 2 MI higher of 7. So I think over 3 is when cancer is concerning, and he was at a 7 in his leg. They were not able to remove all of his tumor. It was wrapped around his bone and his muscle. So the options we were giving were amputation, radiation, chemo by pill form, and then chemo by IV form in hospital. Radiation was like 4 hours away. Buster is a very active dog, and driving 4 hours all the time, like, he'd have to be sedated. So I'd have to end up moving to where his radiation was for the time period that they wanted to do. That wasn't feasible for me. And then same with him being so active. I know dogs who get their legs amputated do recover easily, but I just couldn't see me putting him through that with it being a front leg and a bigger dog. So we ended up going the chemo route. So then I had to decide if I wanted to do an IV chemo or if I wanted to do at home pill. IV chemo, he would have to go, once again, be sedated once a week for like 3 or 4 hours and be on chemo. So I ended up doing the at-home pill form, and I would say it definitely was the right decision with what we were doing. It was the right decision because I was able to have him still at home, safe in his own space.
How long did you actually end up doing the chemo for?
9 months. So we started chemo in May of 2022, and we ended chemo in January of 2022.
And just to give the listeners an idea, because chemo isn't cheap, Can you tell everybody how much you spent in that 9 months?
I spent, between surgeries, chemo, and a diet change, well over $10,000.
Which is phenomenal, first of all, that you were able to dedicate that much money and time and resources into him. But unfortunately, you know, that's not feasible for everybody. And as you said earlier, you started to notice that he wasn't enjoying life as much, and that you were just kind of seeing a decline in his health due to the chemo. So you decided to do something about that. And that is what I find the most interesting about this journey, because he went from being, you know, kind of despondent and sad and not eating well to acting like a happy, healthy dog again. So let's share that journey and walk down that road.
Yeah. So he actually, in between his chemo, he lost around 15 pounds. And like you said, he stopped eating. And then so once that hit, when the minute he stopped eating multiple meals a day, then I was like, that's not right. So we decided to look into some holistic treatments and switching his diet to basically a keto diet with a boatload of supplements. The diet we went with is called Cleo's Diet. We found it on Facebook, surprisingly. And that Facebook group has probably been like my number one support system throughout his whole chemo journey and cancer journey, just because any question you have, you post it on there and they'll have the answer within minutes. So he is on Dr. Harvey's Paradigm. And then he also gets mushroom supplements, Benadryl, cottage cheese and fish oil, milk thistle. We stay away from carbs, any and all carbs. And he is, like you said, enjoying and loving his life wholeheartedly.
This diet that you have him on, you're pretty strict, and you're pretty limited to the things that he can have. But can you explain some of the benefits of some of the supplements that you're giving him, like the mushrooms and the fish oil, the milk thistle?
Yeah. So the mushroom supplements, I know it has been shown in humans. I'm not sure about dogs, but I figured it couldn't hurt. But it's been shown to help prevent cancer. And then his Benadryl is to help keep down his histamines, because the type of cancer he has is from a buildup of histamine. So just like if you were to get stung by a bee, you would get histamines and cause allergic reactions. So his histamines are going crazy. So the Benadryl is to keep that calm. And then the milk thistle is to help protect his liver. And I actually started that before chemo, just because I know how hard that was on his body. So he gets a daily dose of milk thistle every single day at nighttime. And then CBD is also something that's questionable as to whether it helps prevent cancer. I know it can't hurt, so he also gets that daily too.
That's quite a concoction of things. I think I would be really, I would have to schedule myself. I would have to make notes. I would have to have Camblo and Dur alerts just to remember to give all of those things. Do you have some sort of routine that you've implemented so that you make sure he gets everything?
I would say in the beginning, it's very stressful because, you know, you don't know what you're feeding, you know, and like you said, you don't know. Did you in the Benadryl? I don't know. Did you give him the Benadryl? So basically, in the beginning, I had a checklist. So I would put, okay, he needs X amount of Benadryl, X amount of CBD, X amount of mushroom supplements. And I would go down and give him the checklist every single day, because he gets his pills and supplements with his food. So I would go down the checklist and say, okay, Buster got Benadryl, Buster got CBD, Buster got milk. Now we're 2.5 years into feeding this diet change and supplements. So it's natural to me, but no one else can feed him because I am the one that does it all the time. So if I go on vacation, I have to individually bag up AM pills, PM pills. So he has to get individual little bags, and then my dog sitter just dumps it on his food and calls it a day.
I think that's a great way to do it, especially, you know, being a retired pet sitter myself, the owners that left instructions or that set up, you know, the medications and pill boxes for me, all those kinds of things that just make it that much easier. As a vet tech, obviously, I know how to administer medications, injections, things like that. But having it set up for me so that I don't have to remember to take one out of here and one out of there, it definitely makes it a lot easier. So I'm sure that your pet sitter appreciates you, and I applaud you for putting in that much effort, because it's a lot to deal with. Initially, when you decided to go through with the chemo, did they give you a time frame on survival, success rate? Did they give you statistics about any of that kind of stuff?
They did. Without chemo, we were given 6 to 12 months of life. With chemo, 12 to 24 months. So, and that was, those dates were given to me in December of 2021. So he is quickly approaching next week on the 18th of December of 2023, his 2 years since diagnosis. And knock on wood, as of right now, I don't see any near end of his life. So we're going to hopefully keep it that way. But yes, we were given 6 to 12 months without chemo, 12 to 24 with chemo.
And have you done any checkups since that you stopped the chemo to check for growth, to check for new growth, to see if it's spread at all? Have you checked it, or are you just, you completely committed to the holistic path and that's the way you're going?
We have not checked it. Honestly, at this point, the only thing that a traditional vet could do for me is more chemo. And I'm not willing to do that to him anymore. So yes, we're committed to the holistic, and he hasn't had any checks for new growth or anything like that.
I think that, you know, with the quality of life that he has versus to the quality of life that he was having through chemo, I don't think that what you're doing is the wrong way to handle it at all. And personally, I don't know that I would want to know either. You know, if I've decided at this point, we're not going to do chemo anymore, his quality of life was poor, he's doing so much better with all of these dietary changes we've made, we've eliminated things from, you know, our lifestyle, and he's doing well, I mean, why not just roll with it? It's hard enough that he already has cancer. Why make it worse by adding that much more information about the situation?
That's kind of how I am too, because at this point, there's not anything else I can do. So why worry myself more when nothing else can be had? So he's just chilling, just hanging out. That's basically what I tell everybody. They're like, hey, how's Buster? He's hanging out. He's good.
Well, and like you said, at that point in time when you started the chemo, it wasn't in his organs and it was just wrapped around the bone and in the muscle. So it was at least at that point in time isolated, and he did go through treatment. So you probably did stop it from spreading, which again has extended his life, and he is doing well now. So those are all good things. And again, you know, there's not always one right way to do things, but if this is the way that works for you and it works for him, that's truly, I think, the only thing that matters. Let's talk a little bit more about the diet, because nutrition is, I think, a topic that we can talk about across the board for all dogs. But there are some other things in your routine, your monthly routine, as far as like even preventative medication goes, that have to be different because of the cancer. So let's talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, so we, for Buster in specific, have stopped all flea and tick preventative. So he gets only essential oil sprays. It's actually all three of them, but specifically him, I try to keep him very limited on chemicals that go into his body or breathe or that he comes in contact with. So he and all of mine are no flea and tick prevention. They are on HeartGuard. But I just use a essential oil spray through Wonderside, and then I use M collars, that's amber necklaces, to help prevent the fleas and ticks from being attracted to them.
I've heard about the amber collars, and I've looked into them a little bit. I've heard great things about them. I've just never personally tried the amber collars. How do you feel about how it works, and what kind of climate do you live in?
I think they work very well We have all four seasons here, but it never gets to where fleas and ticks would die. So we had them all year round. But since I've been using the amber collars and the essential oil spray, I haven't found a single tick. And it's been a year and a half or flea, well, since using holistic flea and tick prevention.
I've heard really great things about Wonderside. It's not a product that I personally tried, but it is absolutely something that I'm going to be looking into, because I have health problems that cause me to get migraines due to things having artificial scent. And so essential oils is the way that I go with a lot of things. And knowing that they can repel flea and ticks is kind of a really cool thing. And as a vet tech, I mean, obviously they pound that into us, preventative medication, like you always do the preventative medication. But again, there's not one right way to do things. And if the amber collars and the Wonderside works for you, that it could potentially work for other people too. Will it be as effective in an area that's as highly populated with ticks, with dense woods or, you know, hiking trails? I don't know. I obviously can't speak to that, but it's definitely something that I would say proceed with caution, just because you never know. And Lyme's disease is not a fun thing to have to deal with either. So again, that's kind of up to the owner discretion based on your preference and your comfort level. Obviously, I do flea and tick prevention half the year because we have four seasons here, but we have winter. So we don't have the flea and tick issue. Depending on the year, usually October until, you know, February or March, depending on how cold and how much snow we actually end up having here. But it is definitely a concern, but definitely something I'm going to look into, because I think that's a really interesting and obviously less chemical healthy way to approach treating your pets. Let's jump into a little bit more about the diet. There are some things that you said that you don't feed him, and there is a reason for that. So let's kind of go over those things.
There's a lot I don't feed him. Some of the main things that immediately come to hand to mind is rice, flour, and pork. Those are non-negotiable here. We will not feed any of those. So one, he's allergic to rice, and dogs don't need grains biologically. So I just see no reason to give it to him. And then flour is carbs. Carbs turn to sugar, and sugar feeds cancer. So we 100% stay away from flour for everyone. And then pork, because I love pigs to death, but they'll eat any and everything. So I don't know what the owners of the pig, before they took them, you know, to be a dog treat, fed that pig. So I just stay away from pork altogether.
Pork tends to have a little bit higher fat content in it too. And a fun fact about pork is when they make insulin for dogs, they make insulin for dogs from beef. And when they make insulin for cats, they make it out of pork. Because dogs actually, in their systems, don't tolerate pork as well. There are actually a lot of dogs that have allergic reactions to pork, much like dogs have allergic reactions to chocolate. And one of the vets that I worked for kind of drilled that into us and was always saying, like, we never recommend pork. We never recommend pork. We never recommend pork, because it can potentially be, you know, life threatening to a dog. So I don't think your choice there is a bad thing. And yes, pigs do eat everything. So I can imagine, you know, if you don't know what you're putting in your dog's stomach, then, you know, it's just one of those things. I know that there is a breakdown for what dogs need in their diet. I know that you know a little bit more about that. Do you want to explain that?
Yeah, so pretty much they need 80% protein, 10% organ meat, and 10% bone. So 80-10-10 is the way, I guess, it's explained in the nutrition world. So I guess dogs don't really need vegetables and fruit. I do think it's beneficial to them in smaller quantities. But the majority of the time, the 80-10-10 of 80% protein, 10% organs, and 10% bones is the key to having a very nutritious diet for your dog.
Something that we have talked about previously is the fact that dog food is not regulated, that packaging is marketing, that it doesn't have to be accurate or true, that it can, you know, have all kinds of byproducts and fillers and just all kinds of not good things for your dog in the dog food. So you said that you found Cleo's. I know it's one of the more expensive brands. Can you tell us how much it costs a month for it? And also, when you're looking for a dog food, how do you pick the best? How do you know what to look for? Because there's a lot of stuff on the back of some of those bags.
So yeah, Cleo's diet, and the one we chose to go with, is Dr. Harvey's. To feed one dog Dr. Harvey's a month, it's about $150 to $200. I have two dogs on Dr. Harvey's and then one dog who's raw fed. The best way I would say you to find a food for your dog, it's find the highest quality that you can afford. And look at the ingredients on the back. If the ingredients, the first three ingredients have carbs and the last two are all just fillers, that's not good. You need to get, like, the 80-10 tongue. So you need some kind of protein, some kind of organ needs. And those need to be in your first five ingredients, because that makes up the bulk of the dog food.
Something else I wanted to ask earlier, and I completely forgot to mention it, was when we were talking about preventative medication, what do you do about vaccines?
Buster is no longer vaccinated. So I'm questioning whether to continue to do it for the other two. Probably will end up doing titer testing to see if they have the immunity built up from previous vaccines. But Buster is staying away from any and all chemicals, so he is not vaccinated.
Does he get a rabies vaccination?
He does, because that one's required by my state.
I wondered, because it is usually required by the state, and if you can't prove it, then it's just, that's a hassle. I mean, I completely understand. I know I've dealt with several patients that have been through cancer regimens, and a lot of times it's often veterinary recommended to not have them on the vaccines because of the way that it affects their immune system, especially when they're going through things like chemo, because that just kind of adds to the toll that their body is already taking through that massive deterioration process. It's kind of similar to going through, like, the heartworm treatment. They do the same thing. They'll pull certain vaccinations and treatments, preventative medication, because they don't want it affecting the actual treatment. So that's actually something that's not uncommon. Now, you mentioned the titers test, and just to give everybody an idea of what that is, can you explain what a titers test is and why you would give your dog a titers test?
So from my understanding, a titer test is when they test your dog's immunity to certain vaccines. I, in specific, would give my dogs a titer test versus vaccinating, so they don't become over-vaccinated. And if they're immune to what I'm vaccinating for, there's no reason for me to continue to vaccinate them if they already have the immunity built up for that specific vaccine, I guess.
Yeah, you're correct. That's exactly what a titer test is for. And there are specific vaccinations that we give to dogs from puppyhood to adulthood that actually become less and less and less effective over time, because the dogs do fully become immune to those diseases, like parvo. Parvo is one of those ones where when a dog hits about 6 or 7 years old, some veterinarians will not even vaccinate your dog for parvo anymore, because they've reached that age threshold that their body is no longer capable of contracting the parvo. Has it happened? Yes, we have had older dogs get parvo. But the likelihood of a dog getting parvo after the age of 7 is very, very low. So like I said, there are a lot of veterinarians out there that just stop. And that's why they develop things like the titer test, because if you get to a point where your dog is immune to something, you don't want to just keep pumping them full of something that they don't need. So that's also why veterinarians do vaccinations on schedules. And if you look at your receipts when you go to your veterinary office, you go to your annual visit every year, if your veterinarian is giving you 7 vaccinations every year, that's something that you might want to revisit. My dogs, when we go to the vet, maybe 2 or 3 vaccinations each year. Rabies is every 3 years, and then Lyme alternates, distemper alternates. Toby doesn't get parvo anymore. Fitz still does. He's about to hit that range where he won't have to. But those are things that are negotiable and don't have to be given every year on a schedule. That's obviously something that we're going to have to bring up in another episode, because that's a really big, you know, rabbit hole to jump down of information and how all of that works. But it is good information to know, and it is something that, you know, you should definitely visit with your vet about, because it is something that, one, can save you money, but two, also, if it's not necessary, then there is no reason to be doing it. In dealing with this whole thing, the treatment, the diagnosis, the, you know, deciding to go on the holistic journey, changing to the keto diet, all of that, what, in your opinion, is the most important thing for someone to do when they receive a cancer diagnosis from their vet?
First thing would be, first is to stay calm. It's going to be okay. No matter what happens, you have your dog and your dog has you. Your dog can read your emotion. So that would be my first advice for anybody who just got a diagnosis. Secondly, my most important thing that I would suggest is to stop giving carbs. Dogs don't need it, and that is only fueling your fire.
I think that's great advice. And then I'd also like to know what you think is your biggest comfort. Like, going through all of this, what has been the most helpful thing to you? Other than, I know you mentioned the Cleo's Facebook page. What resources, what engagement, what support systems is your, like, what is the one thing that you heavily rely on going through all of this?
My Instagram friend, 100%. They have been there for every little moment that something happened with Buster and I'm bawling my eyes out and I can just call them. I mean, there's friends in real life, but the dog community, the people get it. The people understand that your dog's your kid, the dog, your dog's your life. And he's my life, and getting a diagnosis that my life's going to be ending was really hard. And the people that were there to pick up the pieces that understood how much I love him are definitely people I'm forever grateful for.
I completely agree with that. The dog community is, it's something that I never expected to find on the internet. It's crazy because, I mean, I'm lucky I have friends like Josh who get it, who are the same way in real life. But being able to widen that scope and connect with people, and not only people who understand that that's your child, that's your baby, that's your life, but people who understand what you're going through because they've been through it too, or they know somebody else that's been through it. Because statistically, cancer is becoming more and more prevalent in dogs. I'm looking for the statistic. 1 out of 4. Yep. You're good. No, we're good. We both went there. 1 in 4 1 out of 4 dogs. That's crazy. I mean, I can say I'm on dogs 5 and 6. I've never had a dog with cancer.
Ollie had some benign, but...
Well, I mean...
He had a tumor. Well, he actually lost one of his toes.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, because the cancer had fused onto his bone, so they just clipped his little toe. So he had a raptor foot.
Yeah, I mean, so I've been obviously extremely lucky, but you have 3 dogs and, you know, 1 out of 4... And you've got a dog with cancer. So it's something that hits very close to home, and people get cancer too. So I think that cancer in dogs is probably one of the more relatable subjects for even people not in the dog community, because watching someone or something or your dog go through that deterioration that chemo causes is not fun for anybody. And so having the support system is really, really important. And I'm so glad that you have found it on Instagram. And I'm so glad that you can be a resource for people to come to for all things related to this. I know that we're going to share some of your links in your episode description so that people can look at like the Wonderside spray and the food and all of the things so that they can have better access and information to these items. But also we're going to share your Instagram profile so that people who hear this episode know that they have somebody that they can reach out to and ask questions.
And it doesn't matter what time of day, I will 100% be willing to answer any question.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing this information with us and telling us all about Buster. We're definitely going to have you come back for another episode because you do also have Ella and Hudson, and we would love to learn a little bit more about that. You've mentioned the possibility of servicing Hudson, and we've also talked about things like removing stigmas from e-collars and muzzles and just using tools that are necessary for some owners in training. So we have some more conversations that might be a little happier to have in the future, and we look forward to having you back.
I can't wait.
Well, so we're going to wrap it up for tonight, and we'll see you guys next week on Straight Up Dog Talk.
Straight Up Dog Talk was created by Emily Breslin. It is edited, produced, and co-hosted by Josh Wasta, under the supervision of Straight Up Dog Talk, LLC, and Emily Breslin. If you're enjoying this podcast, follow or subscribe to be sure you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on your favorite platform. Looking for more honest and relatable dog content? Check out our sister show, Unpacked, with Jerry Sheriff and Madison Simpson. Thanks for listening to Straight Up Dog Talk. See you next week.